This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Open for Business is powered by BossBolay.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
BFM 89.9, the business station. My name is Rich Bradbury and welcome to Open for Business. No stranger to the show, Ganesh Kumar Banga is with me on the line. Two decades ago, he envisioned a world where electronic commerce, e-commerce, would not only be a reality for consumers, but become a significant portion of global trade. And it's this vision that's kind of driven his career success from that time onwards. He became EY's Entrepreneur of the Year in 2012, made history by becoming Malaysia's youngest CEO of a listed company at 23 years old. And of course, he is the executive chairman of Commerce.Asia. Welcome back to the show, Ganesh. How are you?
Thank you, Richard. I'm all good.
You're all ready for
the new year.
All refreshed.
Yes, all refreshed.
Now, I think last time I spoke to you, we were speaking about Nufnang. Today, something a little bit different, the e-commerce industry. And we know it's been growing leaps and bounds, especially throughout the pandemic. Talk to me about growth now that we're, you know, progressively moving into this new normal.
Sure. So I think, look, what the pandemic did was it made people more comfortable with e-commerce, right? And during the pandemic, of course, everybody started buying online. And I think that trust factor, which was always a hindrance towards e-commerce, people lack trust in buying online, actually kind of went away as people depended a lot on buying on e-commerce, right? Or buying through marketplaces and buying through web stores, right?
Yeah.
So with that, I think the trust factor has gone. Of course, the growth that we saw the last 2 to 3 years, I think in some years we saw like 2 to 3 times of growth a year.
Yeah.
Some of my brands, so you know, Commerce.Asia actually manages for brands. Some of our brands saw growth of 20 to 30 times over a year or 2 year period, right? Of course, part of that is because the pandemic. Maybe 10% of that is because of the pandemic. But the balance, of course, is because of our efficient marketing, right?
Yeah.
So I think, look, the new normal has made people trust e-commerce more. But I think growth will continue as well. It's just like, I think, SARS 10, 12 years ago, right? When SARS was in Hong Kong 10, 12 years ago and parts of China, people really started to trust e-commerce. And then growth continued from then onwards, right? Of course, as we come out of the pandemic, people would, of course, go more to physical outlets just because they love the experience of physical outlets, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure you've seen a lot of your friends, like, you know, they just want to go to a retail outlet or more because they haven't been there for a long time.
That's right.
Experience,
yeah,
right?
They want the experience, yeah.
Yeah, so people, of course, go there for the next couple of months, I would say, and that would make the growth of e-commerce kind of taper off for a short while. But after that, I believe people will come back, right? So I believe people will come back towards e-commerce and the growth will continue to grow as well.
I can tell you, you know, one of the things that I have noticed about myself is I was never really a big purchaser via e-commerce.
And
because, you know, I wanted the convenience of being able to go somewhere, see what I wanted and purchase it there and then. I'm now on first name basis with most of my couriers who deliver stuff for me. But when we're talking about trust, Ganesh. I think one of the interesting things that I'm looking at and hearing about right now is this idea of us being able to order something today and potentially have it tomorrow. You know, and those last mile issues to be really, really resolved. Are you seeing this movement amongst your companies right now?
Yes. In fact, one of the so let's talk a bit about the kind of types of e-commerce, right? So if you actually go back before the pandemic, there was generally only two types of e-commerce, right?
Yeah.
One is the local e-commerce, right? Which means people buying from Lazada and Shopee. And the second was cross-border e-commerce, where people buy from Amazon and eBay across the world, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Right? And then there were two types of e-commerce. So people buying from merchants across Malaysia and people buying from foreign merchants, which was cross-border commerce, right?
Mm.
But today, things have changed. So what has changed today is basically, there's now four types of e-commerce. And that's a result, of course, of the acceleration of the pandemic. There's a new type of e-commerce called hyper-local commerce, right? Mm-hmm. Where people basically can buy from stores near them, right? Through Grab, right? So for example, now you can buy, the other day I bought a HDMI cable from a store near me and Grab delivered it, right? You buy via Grab and Grab delivered it. So that's hyper-local commerce, right? And of course, the pandemic kind of accelerated that trend, created and accelerated that trend of hyper-local commerce.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And then, of course, you still have the local e-commerce. Then you would also there's another new trend called cross-border localized commerce, right? Mm. So brands in Malaysia who are selling in Vietnam or Thailand, before they used to deliver it from Malaysia, right? Mm. But today what's happened is they need local warehousing there to deliver locally within the audience there, right?
Right.
Because you can't wait 1 week. Consumers today, the expectation, they can't wait 1 week for a product, right?
Correct.
So you need localized warehousing, you need localized operations. Mm. And that's why cross-border commerce, which is the other type that I thought, which is now the fourth type, has actually gone down across the pandemic really, right? So not all types of e-commerce have gone up. Cross-border commerce has actually gone down, but cross-border localized commerce has actually increased where merchants have localized warehousing, right? And that's also where Commerce.Asia comes in. We have localized warehousing in Thailand, Vietnam. We manage e-commerce operations for brands. So brands, Malaysian brands, basically outsource the entire e-commerce operations to us. And we manage it based on a revenue share, right? Mm-hmm. Of course, if they're smaller brands, we do need to have a retainer. But for the bigger brands, we basically do it on a rev share. And we have operations across the region, right? Mm-hmm. So we have operations in Thailand, Vietnam. This year, we're setting up a presence in Philippines and Indonesia. So brands can basically outsource their e-commerce operations to us and we manage it for them, right? And of course, our motivation is basically to increase sales because we work on a win-win partnership where we work on a revenue share with merchants, right?
Right. Tell me how you started Commerce.Asia Group and what was your original, I don't know, vision for it?
Sure. So I started the Commerce.Asia Group about 4 or 5 years ago. It was about 2017, 2018. At that time, Alibaba was coming into Malaysia. If you remember, there was a digital free trade zone, right?
Yeah.
So basically, the government was starting up the digital free trade zone to promote cross-border commerce, right? So the whole idea was to promote Malaysian products overseas and overseas products into Malaysia, right? Mm-hmm. So I saw that as an opportunity because I saw that e-commerce was starting to grow, right? And in my previous venture, of course, one of the last companies I invested in was a company called MOL Pay, right? So MOL Pay was basically an e-commerce payment gateway, which we invested in, which MOL invested in 2010. And it has done tremendously well, right? From something like 30 million ringgit in volume when we invested in 2010, to now like 14, 15 billion ringgit, right? So in volume a year, right? So it really accelerated. And so I saw the potential in e-commerce enablers. So if you look at e-commerce, there are actually three types of players, right? We only see merchants, basically people that sell online. And on the other end, you basically have brands, right? You basically have marketplaces where people sell, right? But there's actually a role for a middle ground, which is basically e-commerce enablers, right? So you have merchants who sell the products, you have marketplaces where they sell, and enablers that basically enable the selling, right? So for example, payment gateways are enablers, logistic providers are enablers. And I found an enabler which was actually a Canadian-based, listed on the Toronto Stock Exchange called Shopify. I'm sure you know Shopify, right?
I haven't heard of them, yeah.
Yeah, so Shopify was trading at $25. I bought Shopify at $25 and I sold at $50 within 6 months. So I was very happy. Shopify is now north of $1,000, right?
Wow.
Right? And so I was like, oh, I should have kept it a bit longer. But never mind, let me see if I can basically build a Shopify of Malaysia. So I started Commerce.Asia to basically invest into e-commerce enablers, right?
Got it.
So I invested in a small e-commerce enabler in Penang at that time, which is a shopping platform like Shopify that integrates the various marketplaces. It's called Site Giant. We initially invested with a 30%. And then, of course, the founder wanted to kind of have a bit of a cash out. So we increased our stake to a majority stake, right? And and from a point of when we invested, it was doing less than 100 million in volume a year. Now it's doing north of 2 billion ringgit in volume, right? So it's gone up 20, 30 times over the last 4 years, right? So it's amazing growth that we have seen in this industry. And then I also invested in all the ancillary services. So we invested in warehousing platforms. We invested in print-on-demand platforms. We invested in the whole ancillary services surrounding e-commerce. Today, the whole group has about, last year, we did about 6 billion ringgit in volume, right? And with 71,000 merchants in the ecosystem, right? So it's done pretty well. And the reason why I did it was actually because local merchants, today, we are not competing. Local merchants, local retailers are not competing with the retailer down the street. With the digital free trade zone, of course, as with things open up, they're actually competing against merchants in China. They're competing against merchants in Vietnam, right? And of course, these merchants have a lower cost, right? And it's so competitive today. If you go to marketplaces, there are millions of merchants there, right? And if you just search for pillows, for example, there's so many different types of pillows being sold. And it tends to be a bit of a price war, right? And we'll never be able to compete with the Chinese sellers or the Vietnamese sellers, right? So basically, local merchants need to increase their capability. They need help. They need basically support to compete with these foreign sellers. And so I started Commerce.Asia to basically help local merchants, local brands, to basically compete in this now international field, right? Or at least regional field, right? And we venture build a business called Enterprise, where we help brands basically sell online. So they outsource the entire e-commerce operations to us. We set up a web store for them. We basically manage their marketplaces. We have a warehouse. So they put their product in our warehouse and we handle everything from warehouse to listing on the marketplaces to customer service online, which is very important if you want sales, right down to marketing, right? And we've been able to grow a number of brands like 20 times. So we've got a brand that went from 50,000 a month to something like 1 million or 2 million ringgit a month, right?
My word. You mentioned listing there. A different kind of listing is something I want to talk about after the break.
Sure.
Right. We're going to have to take a break here, folks. You tuned into Open for Business. Of course, I am on the phone with Executive Chairman of Commerce.Asia, Ganesh Kumar Banga, of course. We'll be right back after these messages here on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Open for Business will reopen in a few moments. Powered by BossBully.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
Become fabulous millionaires. BFM 89.9.
Open for Business is powered by BossBully.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station. Welcome back to Open for Business. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm on the phone with Ganesh Kumar Banga, of course, the Executive Chairman of Commerce.Asia. Ganesh, there's something I want to talk about, and it was in the news earlier this month about a crowdfunding exercise or growth funding, whatever you want to call it. How it's potentially going to be Malaysia's biggest one to date. Can you talk to me? I know there's things that you can talk about and things that you can't talk about ahead of a potential future IPO, but can you talk to me about what you can talk to me about?
Sure. So basically, look, I've invested quite a substantial amount of money in this group to date. I've invested something like 15 million ringgit in this group to date, right? So what I'm planning to do is, of course, as an investor, we want to grow the business, and also we also want to get external investors that could add value to the business as well, right? Including hopefully investors that could be our clients as well, right? So basically, when I started started this business, I had a number of friends that wanted to invest in this business. So I did an equity crowdfunding campaign to enable them to invest through Pitchin, which is an equity crowdfunding platform. I realized that Pitchin was actually quite an efficient way to kind of get your friends and family sometimes as well, right? To invest in your projects, right? Because they manage it, you can have a number of investors that add value, right? So of course, at this stage, we've grown tremendously since then. And so I wanted to kind of look at also getting more investors, and I got some clients also that were interested to invest, right? Mm-hmm. So I thought, look, what's the best mode of, what's the best way to raise capital? So I thought, of course, talking to venture capitalists and whatnot. But then I realized, you know, I hope there's no, I'm sure there are venture capitalists listening to this show.
There are, you know.
Venture capitalists anyway raise money from high net worth individuals as well, right? And corporates as well. So I said, look, in that case, I can go direct to the high net worth individuals and corporates, but how do I manage them, right? What's the right way for them to trust in doing a campaign like this? So I went to Pitchin again, and I'm doing a growth funding campaign right now to get basically investors and also partners, of course, right? So we hope some of our clients, so we're talking to some of our clients to invest, right? So it's been great because it actually opens the door to clients as well, right? So they're clients, of course, or potential clients that say, look, I can give you some business. I invest in you, so I get capital increase as well as you help me grow my sales, right? It's just a win-win-win partnership, right? So I started a new equity crowdfunding campaign. It's gone live. We're targeting to raise 10 million right now, but if there's demand, we may choose to increase it to 20 million. And with that, will be the biggest equity crowdfunding campaign in Malaysia. And then, of course, with that, of course, the next step is seeing how we can all exit together, right? Or make some money together, right? Yeah. And so I'm looking maybe in 2 years as we grow the business a bit more, looking at a potential IPO. There are a few opportunities. You know, I'm Malaysian, so I'm very passionate of being Malaysian. So, of course, my preference would actually to be list in Malaysia, right? If possible, because I believe in the Malaysian market, we're known here. And it'll be easier for the investors, of course, because Malaysia, everybody knows how to trade here, right? And so my preference is, of course, listing in Malaysia for both nationalistic reasons, and also to kind of, and also for the benefit of the company as well, right? Of course, that's one alternative, but the other alternatives, of course, is the specs. Of course, the number of countries that have enabled SPAC listings, Singapore is one of them, right?
Yeah.
So, of course, listing in a SPAC in Singapore is another option that we have. And, of course, you know, M&A or merger with another company that could kind of double our size is also something that we're also open to, right?
Now, what kind of synergy then do you see with your other group, Nuflang, with this?
Sure. So the two groups basically are quite separate in nature. Commerce.asia is basically an e-commerce enabling group, right? Yeah. We enable merchants to sell online, right? And NetCentric or Nuflang is basically a marketing group. We enable SMEs and brands to basically market themselves online, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Right. So it's actually two quite independent nature of business, but of course there's synergies, right? So for example, if their brands that Commerce.asia has that need to market, they need to build their brand, those brands can basically work with Nuflang, right? And we'll recommend Nuflang to basically do a influencer marketing campaign, right? We've also got social media management. They can do social media management. We also have a performance marketing unit that can actually do the performance marketing, right? So that's one aspect. Then the second aspect, of course, is live commerce comes in, where people are actually selling, influencers are selling products online, right? So we did a joint venture between the two groups. We call it Nuflang Live Commerce, which is a joint venture between the Nuflang's group, NetCentric, and Commerce.asia, where we actually help influencers sell products online, right? So the fulfillment is done by Commerce.asia. The payment is, of course, managed. Part of payment is managed by Commerce.asia. And then the influencers come from Nuflang, right?
Got it.
So we've done campaigns for people like We've done campaigns with people like Aeon, actually. Some of you saw the Aeon campaign selling mooncakes on Facebook.
Yes, those influencers, I saw that, yes.
Yes, those influencers were Naftang influencers using the platform of Naftang Live Commerce. Yeah, and which is a joint venture between the two companies, right?
I see. So it's all interweaved one way or another.
That's right. That's right. But they're two independent groups right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they actually have two independent businesses, so as to not confuse investors, right? Investors that want to invest in the growth of e-commerce can invest in commerce.asia. Investors that want to invest in the growth of influencer marketing, which is also a high growth industry, can invest in NetCentric, which is listed on the Australian Stock Exchange, right?
Ganesh, at this point, I have to draw a close to our conversation, my friend, unfortunately. Of course, I've been on the phone with Ganesh Kumar Banga. He is the executive chairman for Commerce.asia, who we have been speaking about today, amongst other things. If you missed any part of this show, don't forget you can download the podcast wherever you normally download it from. I recommend using the BFM app. It's available on the Apple App Store or Google Play. For BFM 89.9, I'm Rich Bradbury.
Open for business? Register your company with BossBully.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.